This morning is our last message in this series, Best Year Ever, and I started the series a few weeks ago telling you guys about a trip I took with my kids to go skiing up at Perfect North, and I told you guys a part of that story. This morning, I want to come full circle and tell you another perspective of the story. We were going skiing, and my intention was best year ever. Best dad ever. I'm going to take my kids who never get to see snow. I'm going to take them skiing, and we set off on this journey, and it's exciting, and we stop at some friend's house there in Kentucky because we don't have clothing for cold, and so we have to borrow some hats and mittens and gloves, and then we're off to Perfect North, and we get there, and I say, guys, do you all want to be ordinary and go skiing, or do you want to be extraordinary and go snowboarding? And they all said extraordinary. So we said, okay, even though I know how to ski already and I'm good at that, I pushed myself, okay? And I said, I'm going to go snowboarding with you guys. And we get all suited up for that. We go out and we take a lesson. The kids go in a little with a couple of the younger kids. And then I'm in a group. And I'm not trying to brag, but I was the best in my group, okay? It was me and there were a couple like younger girls, but I was better than them. And then it came time for us to really see, do we have this? Can we do this? And we go and we get in front of the ski lift, and this is a terrifying thing in of itself. I'm used to skis where they're pointed straight ahead, but snowboards are all kind of sideways, and so I thought I was going to lose a couple of the kids just on the ski lift ride going up the mountain, which was really just a little hill because we were all beginners. But we go up to the top, and we get there, and Wyatt's ready to go, and he takes off, and I say, Emery, let's go, and she says, I'm not ready for this. I can't do this right now, and so I say, okay, well, you can just walk down, and I'm going to go ahead and kind of thrash the hill here, and so I fall my way down the mountain and arrive down at the bottom, and Wyatt's kind of like going by me on down a little further, and I lose sight of him a little bit, and Emery's coming, and I say, you know, come on, Emery, we got to catch up with Wyatt, and I see that she drops one of her gloves that we'd borrowed from these friends of ours, and I'm yelling for her to pick it up. She doesn't hear me. She just keeps coming, and she comes to me. I say, Emery, okay, I'm going to have to go get your glove, and you wait here while we, you know, until I get back, and we'll get Wyatt. And so I go towards the glove, and this little girl picks it up, and she goes on down the hill towards the lodge. And I'm kind of yelling at this little girl, hold up, little girl, wait for me. And that didn't seem creepy at all to anyone. But she kept going, and I'm kind of snowboarding after her, and I never caught her because she didn't fall over and over for the next few minutes. But I didn't catch her, and I have to kind of work my way back up towards where I left Emery, and I get there, and Emery's nowhere to be found. I don't see her anywhere, and I'm, you know, I get scared quickly just because I'm like, I've seen too much Dateline stuff in my life, and I don't know where she is. I don't see Wyatt anywhere. It's like, where's Waldo? They all have pink coats and little black hats on. I can't find anybody, and I go, and I make an announcement, and I'm just praying that nobody there knows me. Wyatt and Emery Birch, your father, can't find you. Report to the lodge. And so I wait there for like 10 minutes, and they never come. And at this point, I'm really getting scared. I mean, I'm really scared. And I go back to where I left Emery, nothing. I go back to the lodge where I told them to report to, nothing. I go into the ski patrol where I see the gentleman who had almost killed himself coming down the hill that I told you all about last time, waiting for his ambulance. And I asked him, can you all call your people and tell them there's a little girl with blonde hair and a little boy with red hair, and they're important to me, and if they find them, hold them. And so they did that, and real quickly back they said, we've got them here. And so it's just this huge relief that comes over me, right? And so I go and I find, I see them and I go running towards them, and Emery just breaks down and is just sobbing. She's just crying her eyes out, and she comes running towards me. Wyatt doesn't even notice that I'm coming. He's just kind of down playing, making snowmen in the ground, and he was never worried, but Emery and I were terrified, right? And as I approach her, she said, I never thought I was going to see you again, and I say, I never thought I was going to see you again either. And we're just crying, and we're like, let's go home. And we skied like one time down a little hill, right? And Emery didn't even ski. She walked. And so my intention for this amazing start to the year, dad of the year, didn't quite go that direction, right? And I look back on that, and I had all the intentions, and I was even headed the right direction. I went to the place where kids are going to have a great time, but I got distracted along the way, right, by something so dumb as like a little like 50-cent used glove. It made me veer off the course, and it took me to a path that I did not want to go, a terrifying path. That was the last thing I wanted to go that direction. And I think about that little story, and I think about my life, and I know my intention is to be a great dad. My intention is to be a great spouse. That's what I want from my life. And yet I wonder why so often I get distracted and I veer off course from that direction, from that destination. I don't know if you can relate to it, but that's something that I hate that happens in my life. You know, in this series, we've been talking about this, that it's direction, not intention, that's going to lead to a destination. And this morning, I want to talk to you all about how can we make sure that we're headed in the direction we want to go. Because if it's direction that's going to end up the destination that we get to, how can we make sure we're headed the direction that we really want to go? When I was in my early 20s, I went golfing with my friend Andrew, and we went to this golf course called Horse Creek. Horse Creek had just been built. The cart paths had been paved, but there was a lot of stuff they hadn't done yet. So like the grounds didn't come up to the cart path, so there was kind of drop-offs on both sides. Just kind of setting the scene for you here. It was a very mountainous course, so it was big ups and downs. And I'm meeting some friends of mine, and they decide to do something really stupid, okay? You know you can kind of mess with a golf cart in where the governor is no longer, you know, there to slow you down. And they do this, and we decide we're going to race between holes. And so we're on this very steep incline and going downhill. It's very fast, and it's ridiculous. And I'm driving, and I'm watching my friend in front of me, Robert, and I see him going off the path. And he's over here going around this turn to my left, and I'm looking at him going off the path. I'm like, they're going to die. And I'm seeing his tire go off. And at the same time, I'm looking over here to the left. I realize that my tire is going off the path as well on the left. And I overcorrect really hard back to the right. I turn the cart on its side, and we slide for what Andrew would say is about the length of a football field on his back, all right? And so he's all ripped up, and it's this terrible thing. And I think back upon that, you know, that happening, and I wonder, why did that wreck occur? And I want to show you guys just something I just looked up this week about driver's ed and what it says about this, okay? And I want you to look the second one down here. You may not be able to read this, so I'll read it to you. It says, remember, if you look at the side of the road, you will steer to the side of the road. Look where you want to go, particularly in an emergency or a skid, and steer there. That's good advice, right? We tend to drift in the direction that our eyes are going. And then if you look under steer where you look, it is important to understand that your eyes determine the path your vehicle follows. You steer where you look. It's true in driving. It's true in our lives. Whatever captures our attention, that is the direction we will go. And ultimately, that's the destination that we will end up at. This is a principle found throughout the Bible that as our attention goes, so goes our life. And we see this in Psalm 119. David says, direct me in the path of your commands, for there I find delight. Turn my eyes from worthless things. David's saying, God, turn my eyes from worthless things, because I know if my eyes are on worthless things, that's the direction that I will go, towards worthless things. Has anybody ever been distracted and given your attention to something that was worthless? At the time, it grabbed your attention, but looking back on it, you realize, man, that was a worthless pursuit. Some of you all drive those things that grabbed your attention, right? There's this thing that happens where we can be drawn that way. You know, there's moments that kind of wake you up as to what's important. Last night, Kentucky lost their second game in a row in basketball. And I can be like a lot of Kentucky fans where my life is out of balance, where I think that's very, very, very important. And there's moments like last night where I say, this doesn't really matter, okay? This doesn't matter. This isn't that meaningful. It's not that big of a deal. I'm not going to watch any more of these games. I say that until the next game. But there's moments that kind of remind us what's really important in life. We went on a mission trip a few months ago to Ecuador, and we're getting ready to go on a mission trip to the Dominican Republic this summer. And I love about mission trips, they are like sobering moments for me, where when you get over into a country where people don't have all the things that we have and we so often chase after, and things that we think will bring us happiness, yet you see joy and contentment in their faces, and you see little kids who have nothing yet, their smile, I mean, it's amazing what it does for you. And it reminds you, really, what's the most important things in life? And it kind of sobers you up for a little bit. Listen to what Solomon, David's son, said in Proverbs 4:25. Let your eyes look straight ahead. Fix your gaze directly before you. You see, we'll either live our life distracted by things that grab our attention, right? Where we just are kind of going through life and whatever grabs our attention, whatever, kind of our eyes catch us, we'll live our life by those distractions, or we will live our life in such a way that we determine that we're going to set our attention, we're going to set our focus, our eyes on what is most important. Before we ever go anywhere, we set our attention about what matters most for us, and that's the path that we choose. Now, whether we go by just kind of happenstance and what grabs our attention, or we set our attention. Either way, the truth remains the same. Where our attention is, it will always determine what direction we're going and will always lead to the destination that we're headed towards. Jesus said in Matthew 6:22-23, the eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. Now, Jesus is in a time where there's no electricity, and so people would use lamps to light the way in the darkness. And wherever the light of the lamp led, that's where their feet would walk. That's the direction that they would go. So the lamp would lead the way. And what Jesus is saying is, just like the lamp leads the way, your eyes lead the way in your life. And the direction your eyes go, as your eyes go, so will go your life, for the good or for the bad. We don't drift into good directions. We have to prioritize what we're going to give our attention to. And this morning, I want to give you guys some areas that perhaps we should give our attention to. Some areas that many of us would say are the most important areas in our lives. And I want to start off by thinking about giving our attention to time with our family. Giving more attention, more priority to the time we spend together. We live in an interesting time where we can spend time with people, but not really spend time with people. We can be in conversations with people, yet not really be in conversations with people. I mean, in the past, like when people would spend time together, they really spent time together. Before there was all these distractions pulling at us, when people had conversations, they would really have conversations. Now, you can be having a conversation with someone while they are having a conversation with someone else. And maybe you've experienced this where you're talking to someone and they're like checking their phone as the text message comes in, or they're sending an email and it's like, are you talking to me or are you talking to them? And it can be a frustrating thing. But our time that we spend together is so important. I was reading this week a blog by a marriage counselor, and he was talking about how people come into the office, and as they begin to talk about what's going on in their marriage and how they got where they are, they say things like, well, We've fallen out of love. I don't feel like I know them anymore. They've changed. They're not the same person. He's not the same person. She's not the same person. And they give all these reasons why they are where they are. And the counselor said that the question he always asks them is, how much time did the two of you spend together today? How much time will the two of you spend together tomorrow? How much time do you two spend together, really just spending time together? And sometimes they'll look at him like he's crazy, like, no, don't you understand? We're telling you, we don't like each other. We don't get each other. She's changed. He's not the same. And he's saying, no, you don't understand. The reason your love is dwindling away is because your time has dwindled. When you first fall in love with someone, all of your time goes there, right? And yet, when we spend less and less time with each other, that relationship begins to falter. And, you know, there's a rhythm we can get into, a bad rhythm in our relationships where we don't spend time together and we don't feel close together. And he gave just four things that you could do. And I want to share this with you real quickly because I thought it was helpful for me about how to get into a better rhythm if you're in a bad place right now with your spouse about spending time together. And so just four quick things. One is pray about the specifics of your spouse's day. And what that means is that you have to actually know the specifics, right? If you're going to pray about them. And so it requires a conversation. It requires knowing your spouse and what they're going through, what they're worried about, what they have coming up, what's on their plate right now. And so when you know those things, you pray about them. And then it keeps you engaged with them throughout the day. And at the end of the day, it creates a wondering within you of how did these things turn out? It's a connection, even when we're apart. The second one is call or text at least once a day to check in. And as I was reading this, I felt bad because I know that Lauren sometimes texts me or calls me, and we're doing it. But even in the midst of that, I'll tell her, I'm just really busy right now. I've got, can we talk later? And I realize that that doesn't count as one of our texts during the day, I don't think. It's when I'm just sitting, my response is, I can't talk right now, right? And so we connect with each other during the day like that. Schedule a consistent date night. This is hard when you have kids. It just is. I've got to be honest. I would love to say, Lauren, I have this consistent date night every single week. It's just on the calendar, but it doesn't always work like that. It rarely works like that. But I know this. I know we need it. My parents took our kids on Friday night and took them out and actually let them stay at their house. And so Lauren and I had all Friday evening to ourselves and got to actually like sleep in the morning without people running in and cannonballing in into your bed. And it's amazing what just like 10 hours can do for a relationship, you know? It really is. And we all need that. We got to have moments where we're scheduling that time with each other. And then the last thing is have at least 5 minutes of uninterrupted conversation every single day. And that doesn't sound hard. That sounds like a really small thing. But you know the number of people that don't have that? Where, you know, you just have some pass-by conversations or conversations that are around TV or, you know, the kids are around and you don't have that time just prioritizing, paying attention to one another and spending time with each other. You know, I think about this, that prioritizing our time, it's not easy and it always costs something, but it's so worth it. Not just in our marriages, it's worth it with our kids. I was spending some time with Wyatt this past week, saying our prayers before bed, and Wyatt like loves to like drag out the night by like being kind to me and like pulling me in with kindness, and he kind of pulls on my heartstrings for like each time he pulls, I think it adds like 15 or 30 minutes to how late he stays up, and so we have these conversations, and Wyatt's like, Dad, you're the best dad ever. And I'm like, Wyatt, I think you just stole like our message series. Like, you know, that's not, you know, why am I so great? And I thought he was going to give me something fluffy. But he said, you know, Dad, the thing I love most about you, I appreciate, is there was a day last year when I was having a really bad day. And you came to my school and you ate lunch with me. And you brought me like some magic cards. Like it was like a card deck that where we could trick his friends to make them think that we could read their minds and pull the card. And you brought the card deck and you brought me a Snickers and Subway. And he was like listing like everything that was a part of that like 30-minute moment, okay? And as he's telling me this, I'm like, this really mattered to him. He remembers everything. I mean, I haven't really thought a lot more about that moment, but it was important to him. And he said to me, Dad, I think about that day a lot, like all the time. And I was thinking to myself, you know, it cost me a little something to drive out your way and go there. But man, it's so worth it, isn't it? When we give our time to the people around us and show them that they're a priority, the payoff is amazing what it does. And so maybe we need to give attention to spending our quality time with our family. Maybe it's paying attention to our talk. Dr. John Gottman does research on marriages. And he does research on marriages that succeed and marriages that fail. And he studies these couples, and it's pretty amazing. He can predict with like a 94% accuracy whether you're going to get divorced or not if you spend like an hour with him. So I'm like, Lauren, I don't know. I don't want to go visit him for an hour. I'm scared. But he does, and just by seeing your interactions with each other, okay? And one of the biggest things that he says, one of the biggest indicators, is your ratio of positive to negative comments in your relationship. And he said, marriages that survive and make it, they have a ratio of 5 positive statements or comments or touches with one another to every 1 negative. So 5 positive things for every 1 negative. The ones that don't make it, that number a lot of times is inverse, right? Or they're just 4-1 or 3-1. 5-1 is the number that he says is like the baseline for whether you're going to make it. And he says, but that's just marriages that make it, marriages that like are great marriages, marriages that we would look at and say, wow, I want to be like them. He said those marriages typically have a ratio that's more like 20-1, 20-1. And as I read that, I felt guilty sometimes. I think, wow, I want to do better, right? I want to do better in those areas. Listen to what Hebrews says in Hebrews 3:13. But encourage one another daily, as long as it's called today, so that none of you may be hardened by sin's deceitfulness. Encouragement's a daily need that we all have, because sin is deceitful. And we need encouragement because it softens our hearts. I mean, it actually softens our hearts to each other. It's a pretty amazing thing. And so this morning, in this area of your talk, how's your ratio in your marriage? How's your ratio with your kids? How's your ratio just in life? What kind of atmosphere is in our home? Maybe this week you need to keep a running tally, determine what's our ratio. I mean, you know, you've heard of like the curse jar. You could have like just a negative jar, you know? And when something negative comes out of your mouth, put it in the jar and keep track this week. Let's run a tally and see what our ratio looks like. See, we can change the atmosphere in our homes. We can change it where it really is the best year ever in our marriages and with our kids. But it's going to require giving attention, paying attention, that our words are words that build up those around us. Maybe it's that we need to pay attention to the spiritual life of our family. As parents and as grandparents, our role, your role, as the spiritual mentors of your kids and grandkids, I can't overstate it. The spiritual development of the kids in our lives, you are the key component. It's not the youth group. It's not the church. It's you. And so what is going on in that role in your life? Are we paying attention to the significance that God has given us as their parents or grandparents? Deuteronomy 11:19 says this, teach them, speaking about God's laws and his commands and his ways, teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit down at home, when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up. What is being described in Deuteronomy are just moments, opportunities that we have to take advantage of in the spiritual development of our kids' lives. You see, for me, I think about it like in these kind of terms. It says, when you walk along the road, and I think about in the car with my kids, that there's opportunities for intentional conversations to take place. Sometimes when I'm in the car with my kids, I've got to be honest, I can't stand it because they are like horrible at certain moments. And I mean like they're fighting with each other and they're too far back for me to, you know, I can't take my eyes off the road or we will go that direction. So I have to keep looking forward and it's just, you're threatening them and you're just like, quiet game, go. And it's like, you know, I'm sorry, I was having a moment with you guys here. It can be a rough thing, right? But I know this, that if I'm intentional, we can have conversations that matter. If I'm intentional, like there's times in the morning on the way to school when I take the three of them, there's moments where we do some intentional things. Like I'll pull out my phone and plug it into the stereo system and get on YouTube and find like a worship song we do in church where they have like the lyrics, when the lyrics, it's like karaoke, okay? When the lyrics show up as the song's going. And my kids, to really get them engaged, I'll say, we're going to have a singing competition All right? We're going to see who sings the best. Because now they all really want to do it. And they will, like, I'll say, Wyatt, you go first. And he'll sing. And, like, Wyatt's got a good voice. And I'll be like, Emery, you go. And you sing. And, like, and Emery's really confident. And I'll be like, Harper, you sing. And Harper's got this vibrato that's just, it's awesome. Because you don't hear little girls with vibrato. Like, she's amazing. They're all so good, and it's so much fun, and we'll sing it through, and I'm like, now everybody sing together. And it's like, we're having this, like, amazing moment in the card. It's like, this is so fun. And then they'll say, who won? And I'm like, y'all missed it. You missed the moment. That wasn't it. But see, we can do things that engage our kids spiritually. We can do things as parents, and maybe you're a grandparent, and the parent isn't filling that role. You can fill that role. You have a place in their life where you can make an impact in that area. And so never miss those opportunities. When you're going down the road, when you're putting your kids to bed at night, don't miss that opportunity to pray with them, to speak life in them, to prophesy over them and speak vision over them about what they are going to do with their lives, that God has a plan for them, that God's going to do something great through your kids. Do you believe it? Speak that over your kids. They need to hear that. They hear so many different things from your mouth and your lips. Let them hear what God is going to do through them. Help build dreams in their life of what they can accomplish with God. See, I think that there's special opportunities. And here's my fear. I don't want to miss them. I don't want to get distracted. I don't want to be headed down the path and, like, something flashy catches my eye and my head turns and all of a sudden we're going a different direction. I want my mind and my eyes focused on the things that matter most. In Genesis 22:18, God promises Abraham about his family and his kids and his grandkids and his great-grandkids. He says these words, through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me. Because you've been faithful, I am going to be at work in your family. Because you've been faithful, I'm going to use your family to change the world. Isn't that what you want? And your family, isn't that what you want, that God would do something amazing in your family and through your family? It starts with us paying attention to the things that matter most. This morning, we have some people that are going to be doing this. They're paying attention to what matters most in their life, to their spiritual life, their relationship with God. They're paying attention in this way of baptism. They're saying, I want my life to be focused upon Jesus. I want everyone to know this is the path that I'm on. This is the direction that I'm headed, that I'm not going to go to the right or to the left, but that I'm going to follow through on this path until I reach the destination that God has called me to. What about us? What are we going to do? How can we pay attention? What step can you take today to maybe refocus your life upon the things that matter most? Maybe this morning, for the first time, you need to pay attention to this very serious thing of your relationship with God. I need to start paying attention to the spiritual lives of my home and make sure that we're headed the path that we all would want to go. If that's something that you need to do this morning, maybe you want to come down and pray as we're singing. Maybe right there you want to grab your spouse's hand and say, let's make a commitment this week. We're going to keep track of our ratio. How are we doing with our talk? Let's make a commitment this week. We're going to do those four or five things that real quickly can help make it more intentional about the time we spend together. Whatever it may be for you, make a choice this morning. Make a decision. And believe that as you turn your attention that direction, that it's going to change the direction of your life. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for just a simple truth, God. It's true when we're driving a golf cart. It's true when we're driving a car. It's true in our lives that where our eyes are focused, that's the direction we're going to end up going. God, help us to focus upon the things that matter most, the most important things. God, this morning, if we've gotten distracted by things that don't matter, if our eyes have seen a little glove be picked up that doesn't really matter and it's caused us to veer off and leave behind what's most valuable, God, would you call us back to the path? God, would you set our attention back where it needs to be? God, I believe this is a year, God, that you can fix marriages. God, marriages that are broken and toxic. God, this could be the year that things turn. God, kids who are going a wrong direction. God, this could be the year, God, that you turn their hearts back towards you. God, we're believing for an amazing year because you're an amazing God. God, help us to put our eyes and our focus on the things that matter most so we can get to where it is that we all really want to go to. We love you, Jesus, and we pray this in your name. Amen.